Well, the end was supposed to be here by now, Lee. Yeah, it was. Yeah. April was originally scheduled to be the worst month for the stock market since the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Mainstream financial media declared it so. Tweet went viral, bounced around for a few days. It was going to be terrible. It was going to be absolutely awful. All because of Trump's tariffs. And he wouldn't just give in to China and go away. How'd that work out? I just want to remind people where we were April 2nd, Liberation Day, mm-hmm. and really that week. And I mean, just the absolute doldrums in the roller coaster ride that they took the stock market on.
Yeah.
And where are we now? How'd that work out? After, remember, all of the smartest, brightest, rightest people, the shiny shoes, the Wall Street set, from CNBC to Fox Business, all assured us these tariffs were a disaster. I mean, Cheryl Cassoni might as well have just showed up in black every day for Fox and Friends in the morning. This was just, it was terrible. It was going to end everything. It was going to be awful. Consumer confidence, unexpectedly high numbers. Wow. I mean, no, really, what a turnaround.
Yeah, subheadline, we got it wrong.
Right, which they will never admit, okay? If you're making your investment decisions listening to these people, stop. Turn around. Don't. There are much better people with much bigger audiences on X. This is why the mainstream media has no credibility, and the mainstream financial media should have even less than that. The conference board's gauge of confidence increased by 12.3 points to 98, marking the biggest monthly gain in consumer confidence in 4 years. And this is what, like, I don't know, a month and a half after Armageddon?
Yeah.
Supposed to be Armageddon. But then remember, we had them, and this is one of these stats that's going to be burning my brain for years, Lee. I will never forget it. Scott Bessent got it from Vanguard. And that was this. 97% of mom and pop investors, just people with 401ks, they're not institutional investors, they're not hedge funds, did not at the time sell their stocks since Trump took office. They held on to it. And so these people whining and complaining and whooping up hysteria on all these channels were completely ignored by 97%. In other words, it's the mom and pops, it's the regular people who just looked at the hedge funders who were on CNBC tearing their hair out, saying the end is nigh, laughed, and went about their business. They couldn't even, so when you saw the market go down, they fully intended to crash it, but they couldn't do it because they couldn't get anyone to believe them.
Yeah. Main Street are not a bunch of lemmings.
No, not anymore. And, you know, I was saying at the time, 5 years ago, they could have crashed this market. And I mean truly, well and truly crashed it, really achieved their goal, which they telegraphed, which again was the worst crash since the Great Depression in a single month, like the worst month for stock losses in it since the Great Depression. That was the scale of their ambition. They couldn't do it. And by the way, such is their hatred for Trump and their desire to maintain a system that artificially enriches them, because it's not capitalism, that they were willing to risk destroying the market. You know, in other words, starting a ball rolling down a hill that they lose control of. By the way, this is the best part. MarketWatch has a piece out. What did all these hysterical hedge funds and big industrial, you know, scale investors do after they sent their shiny shoes on TV to foment terror? You know what they did quietly by the end of the month?
What? Buy back stock?
But they bought it all back. Yeah. They bought it back. Strange thing to do since Armageddon's on the way at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
I just love the irony here. And I bring this point up, Lee, just to remind people, be very, very careful about believing these people about anything. Because they lie. I will never forget, as long as I live, being on the radio the week of the real estate market crash that would cause the Great Recession. I'll never forget it. First few days of the week, they send, I called him the ghoul because he really did look like a ghoul, Austin Goolsbee. And he would be on there with all the talking heads telling us that this real estate market thing wasn't real, that it was fine. It was great. Hold on to your stocks. Hold on to your investments. Nothing wrong. That was like Monday and Tuesday. By Thursday, bam, crash. So understand, if there's actually a crash coming and it hurts them, they will lie to you up to the moment of it. Conversely, to try to stop Trump, they will lie to you up to the moment of it. Just be very careful who you believe. Because these people got it way, way, way wrong. And there's no mea culpa. There's no, oh, sorry about that. Did we give you bad advice? You know what it is? It's like Biden all over again. It's like Biden and dementia. Mm-hmm. We could not have known. Yeah, you could. Anyway, it was supposed to come in at 86. Instead, it came in at 98, the Consumer Confidence Board's gauge. So
maybe Cramer will have a Jake Tapper moment and write a book about it in 4 years.
Yeah, and then read it and do the opposite of what he says. Exactly, you'll be rich. Yeah. Very, very prosperous. Yeah, right, yeah. It's incredibly good investment strategy. So, new poll out, we'll see. 57% of primary voters would love to vote for someone other than Lindsey Graham. That's interesting.
What poll
in South Carolina?
Is that a Winthrop poll?
No, it is a Pulse poll, and it is put out by the Mark Lynch campaign. So it was paid for by the campaign.
Yeah. All right. Well.
So yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see. If that is true, that would be very interesting considering Trump has endorsed Lindsey, if that's true. In other words, that's people saying to Trump, nah. But then again, I mean, you remember when Trump was here, it's happened more than once. He's been here for rallies. He introduces Lindsey and the whole crowd boos.
Yeah, that big rally in Pickens County, it was that was very interesting. And he had to quickly come to the defense of Senator Graham.
I know.
Right there on the stage, live, yeah.
I mean, that's the heart of the GOP base right there.
Yeah.
And that's also Lindsey's stomping ground. Yeah. I mean, he grew up around there. I mean, that's the heart of the heart. And I mean, you're just like, wow, I don't know. Yeah. But somehow the guy pulls it off. So it's crazy. You go into it thinking, how can this guy possibly win? But then he does.
Yeah, and I think it's because there's never a coalition that coalesces around a single individual primary opponent. It's always divided up. And so he's either able to get enough to, you know, avoid the runoff, or at least if they do have to go to a runoff, that he's able to overcome there because there's not a solid coalition of folks who will get around one candidate in the primary.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that when you look at the sort of mentality of people in the Charleston area.
Oh, yeah. That's it. I mean, that's
yeah.
He can. I think that the further south you go in this state, the less true conservatism you see.
Yeah. And there's this big swath of Charleston that
it's rhinos.
Yeah, it's rhinos. People who will sometimes even vote for a Democrat if the Democrat is moderate enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Which none of them are, but some of them pretend to be. That's where, you know, Lindsey's looking to. And I mean, that's who put McMaster in. Mm-hmm. I mean, the upstate didn't go for McMaster. And that's why when like literally the upstate's burning down, as it was, with the Table Rock fire, McMaster doesn't even show up. He just is kind of written off this part of the state. So it's almost like South Carolina is two states. One half with real talk radio and the other half with talk radio. And people don't know what's going on. So and then just the makeup of the voters. There's a lot of people moving to Charleston are liberal or they're moderate. So that's how it sorts out. But it'd be interesting. I've always thought, though, Lee, if the right candidate came along at the right time, they might they'd have to hit everything perfectly. They might be able to just edge out Lindsey.
Yeah, it would be a tall task.
Yes, it would be hard.
But it is doable, yeah.
Yeah. The thing with Lindsey is a lot of people owe him money, like K Street, lobbyists, people. I mean, and so whoever you are, you try to run against Lindsey, you're going to get hit with a boat of cash that's going to get, you know, just in terms of negative ads, it's going to be so massive. I don't know if a human being could overcome it.
Yeah, and that's one reason you always see mailers for Lindsey Graham. You always see commercials every now and then, whether there's a campaign going on or not, a primary or general election. He's always got that you know, pat and Lindsey on the back message out there by some group at some time. And that's a smart thing for him to do because he realizes the vulnerability.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, part of the problem is open primaries, too, that Democrats go right for them every time.
Well, that is the biggest problem that faces conservatism in this state, is the legislators down in Columbia that are stopping us from getting the closed primaries, because the grassroots Republican Party, every single county has had some type of resolution asking the state party to do it. The state party wants it done, too, but they can't get the elected Republicans, so-called Republicans, to go for it. And that's the problem.
Yeah, because Lindsay raises money for all these people. If you
it's not just Lindsay either.
Yeah, but Lindsay is the godfather of the state politically. He's the godfather of the machine. You don't want to cross him because he will crush you in your primary. Everybody knows that, and they're afraid of him, quite frankly. So nobody wants to step out and say, hey, we should close our primaries because he would lose. So he is the big reason our primaries stay open and the state's so liberal. Could this be the election cycle where South Carolina finally dropkicks Lindsey Graham? Seems like it shouldn't be too hard. Remember the last two times Lindsey has appeared with Trump? The most recent time is the worst. In his own home county, gets booed by Trump supporters. That was embarrassing. So, I mean, is this guy really going to win a Republican primary in a state that boos him even with Trump's endorsement? Here to answer that question is Noel Fritsch. He is the general consultant for the Mark Lynch for Senate campaign. So he is the general consultant for Lindsey's opponent. Good morning, Noel.
Hey, good morning, Kara. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is an interesting poll, though. This top line number, the 57%. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is by Pulse Opinion Research, which is a white label service for Rasmussen Reports. A lot of your listeners will be familiar with Rasmussen Reports. Pretty widely known, reputable, very reputable survey firm out there, public opinion and research firm. And it's a huge sample. It's over 1,000 likely Republican primary voters, which sadly in the state of South Carolina includes our enemies, the commie Democrats, some portion of them, because guys like the governor, McMaster, and some of the other guys, Merle Smith over there in Columbia, like to have the Democrats come into the Republican Party primary to choose our nominees, which is how we get, serpents like Lindsey Graham. And right now he's doing his chameleon thing. He is it's election time again. And so he is way up President Trump's behind. And so I think the folks know that. That's what this survey shows. Mark Lynch is up, the president owner of Jeff Lynch Appliances up in Greenville. He has he's pretty widely known up in the upstate. Of course, we've got some work to do getting his name around the rest of the state. But the great news is that 57% of the primary electorate in the Republican Party primary in South Carolina already is saying, I'm a no on Lindsey Graham. And that does include, there are some undecideds, and we're very confident that a lot of those are going to come to Mark Lynch. And the rest of the numbers and the polling numbers there show that just there's basically an antipathy for Lindsey Graham. People are just sick and tired of this guy.
I have a lot of trust in Rasmussen polling. They've got a really great track record, especially in recent years. And I think that it's interesting. Lindsey Graham does have Trump's endorsement, but yet 57% of primary voters don't want to vote for him. Do you think that endorsement is going to be enough to push Lindsey over? I mean, his campaign commercials now are all Trump endorse me, Trump endorse me, Trump endorse me.
Yeah, we're a year out. It's interesting. After Mark launched in February, Mr. Lynch launched his campaign. We started hearing from folks in D.C., conservative media folks, like, wow, what's going on down there? We've never seen Lindsey campaign over a year out from a primary. And he's obviously scared. He obviously knows he must have the same polling we have. Okay. Cause he knows he's got problems and he's trying to shore up the Trump electorate here. Well, the good news is one of the data points from the poll shows, as Breitbart has reported, shows that, the voters would much rather have, by a margin of 60% to 20%, have a successful businessman like a Mark Lynch who can doge the economy here and doge the government and really bring efficiency and accountability back to government. And, you know, South Carolina, it's a great state to live in. And that's a double-edged sword, right? Because I know you know this, Tara. Like, everybody's like, you know, there hasn't been too much government intrusion, but there is more than people are aware of. But the flip side of that is a lot of people are moving here, and they just aren't aware that, you know, it's such a good life. Everybody's like, hey, this is great. It's easy for the big government stuff to creep in. And I know you've seen that over time. It's really important for everybody this election cycle to let folks know about how bad Lindsey Graham is. Okay. And thankfully only it looks like about 20% of people say that a career lawyer and career politician is the man for the job, whereas 60% say they want a successful businessman like Mark Lynch.
What is Lindsey Graham's, I think you told me, was it 43%? Does he come in at 43% of the vote? What is his actual level of support?
Yeah, so in they call this the ballot test. This is kind of like one of the crucial questions on these surveys, and these are all statistically sampled so that you have accurate geographic representation. So there's a lot of science that goes into creating these things so that they're accurate. And so it's in a head to head right now. You have Lindsey Graham all the way down at 43%. He's well below 50% in a head to head ballot test. And there's something like 28% undecided. And so we're very, and that's before people are, informed of Lindsey Graham's track record, like he just did earlier this year, voting against Doge cuts. Lindsey Graham voted against the Doge cuts before people even know that. He's only at 43%. Of course, Mark Lynch has invested mightily into his campaign effort. He's put $5 million of his retirement money where his mouth is. So he's not just talking. He's ready to go and remove this flip-flopping chameleon Lindsey. And it looks like, according to this survey, that he's well-poised to do that.
Okay, yeah. So you just explained right there why Lindsey Graham is campaigning a year out. I mean, you're at 43% as a sitting senator. That's really bad with 28% not sure. I mean, that is not a vote of confidence in a state that you should have all shown up. And the fact that Lynch has put $5 million in, I didn't know there was that much firepower. He actually maybe could do some damage to Lindsey Graham.
No question about it. And that's just the start, Tara. Mark is wisely running a nationwide campaign, fundraising nationally, and so we can easily see that go, from the seven figures into the eight figures with, you know, $10, $12, $14, $15 million for this primary. And Lindsey Graham knows that, and he's scared. There's no question he's running. He's responded to this poll already within hours an hour or two of its release.
I know Mark Lynch is known in the upstate, but he's not known statewide. How did Lynch do in this poll? What was his number? Where's
so,
he starting?
We're the baseline for Lynch before we've spent any paid advertising statewide is at 30%. So there is a gap to make up. So it's 43-29. So we're just below 30%. And again, there's 28% undecided. And so we're within striking distance. There's no question about it. And Lindsey Graham knows that. And that's why he's responded to Breitbart's requests for comment on the poll last night. And so now Mark Lynch has been barnstorming the state. He's been all over the place, Horry County, Lexington County, Richland County. He's been down in the low country a ton, a whole lot. And so the folks are ready. The folks just need to meet Mark Lynch. And once they do, it'll be obvious and evident to everyone in South Carolina that he's the guy to get rid of this flip-flopper, Lindsey.
Gonna be interesting. He's gonna, you know, feel like I think that the Trump endorsement's going to protect him. I don't know. Mark Lynch's, this is his response. Mark Lynch's poll is fake news, a Graham campaign spokesman said in response to Lynch. Lynch said in a statement that now is the time President Donald Trump needs politicians around him he can trust to enact MAGA agenda for the American people. So interesting. And you're right. They responded fast to that. So,
yeah, it was within an hour of the poll going up. So it's they're clearly monitoring the situation, Tara. Right. And so they know it's not fake news. Otherwise, they wouldn't be spending buku, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, like between February, March, and April and May of 2025, over a year ahead of the primary.
It's It's going to be a fascinating race to watch. Noel Fritsch, thank you so much for joining us this morning on 98.9 WORD. Okay, now it's becoming clear what the scandal actually is. The reason that the media had to hide the fact that Joe Biden was in such decline he could not govern. It was not the fact that Joe Biden was in such decline he couldn't govern. It was that people would immediately ask the next question. Okay, who's governing? That would be the Politburo, as they call themselves. Three trusted advisors, Jill Biden and President Hunter Biden. Crackhead in chief. Fantastic. Folks, in Bidenomics, honestly, did it not feel like it was being run by a crackhead? I mean, well, we really did have 9% inflation. But how do we get there? Listen to this. Little notice passage in Jake Tapper's book, Original Sin, where he confesses to the original sin of lying to you, essentially. It's what he did. And covering up Biden's situation. Kayleigh McEnany read it on Fox News. It's shocking.
So the point was made that these are not Senate-confirmed aides. Listen to these two sentences, allegedly from a cabinet secretary to Alex Thompson. I've never seen a situation like this before with so few people having so much power. They would make huge economic decisions without calling Treasury Secretary Yellen. These aides seem to be the ones making the calls. That's not the way democracy works.
Well,
okay, let's review. Cabinet members tell Jake Tapper that aides who were not even confirmed by the Senate, just random people they hired, were making major economic decisions without consulting with the cabinet, without consulting with the Treasury Secretary. Gosh, it all makes sense. Now, remember how they gaslit us. Remember? If you couldn't understand how amazing Bidenomics was, it was only because you're not very smart. They said that, not so many words. Jen Psaki did. They even sent Biden out to read it off the teleprompter. So many clips in my bank, my audio bank, of people saying, well, you know, the American people just don't understand how great 9% inflation is. They don't get it. How can we explain it? I don't know, Jen. Maybe we'll speak slower. They fed us a crap sandwich. Here's Alex Thompson talking to Shannon Breen on Fox News. You can see the attitude here.
You quote a longtime Biden aide basically admitting he shouldn't be running again. They said to you on page 85, he just had to win and then he could disappear for 4 years. He'd only have to show proof of life every once in a while. His aides could pick up the slack. Who would have been running the White House in a second Biden term?
Well, this person went on to say that when you're voting for a president, you're voting for the aides around him. But these aides were not even Senate-confirmed aides. These are a White House aides. These were unelected people. And one of the things that really, I think, comes out in our reporting here is that if you believe, and I think a lot of these people do sincerely believe, that Donald Trump was and is an existential threat to democracy, you can rationalize anything, including sometimes doing undemocratic things, which I think is what this person is talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Undemocratic thing. Yeah, like trying to figure, well, you know what? We'll raid the Treasury, call it Bidenomics, jack inflation through the roof, printing money to give to our friends. We'll hose everybody who gets in our way and say they're crazy if they think that this Bidenomics is bad. And to get away with it all, we'll send our opponent to prison for 700 years. That pretty much covers it. Meanwhile, folks, the inevitable breakup has begun. Elon Musk, in a CBS interview, saying he's very disappointed in the big, beautiful bill. I don't blame him. I feel bad for the guy. I do. Look, he's still rich. So there's only so bad you got to feel for him. But he put everything on the line. Lost 25% of his net worth. Tesla will never recover. Not here. And you look at some of the numbers in other countries, like Sweden. Holy cow. What a bloodbath. For what? Nothing. Basically nothing.
So, you know, I was like disappointed to see the massive spending bill, frankly, which increases the budget deficit, not just decrease it, and undermines the work that the Doge team is doing.
I actually thought that when this big, beautiful bill came along, I mean, like, everything he's done on Doge gets wiped out in the first year.
I think a bill can be big or it can be beautiful, but I don't know if it can be both. My personal opinion.
Says he's disappointed in the big, beautiful bill. Now, think about this for a minute, okay? Because, look, when the Democrats hose us, I tell you, what were we told this fall when we watched Mike Johnson partner with the Democrats, Speaker Mike Johnson, who's, we're told, is a Republican, but it's never clear, partner with the Democrats to spend an ungodly amount of money before Trump could get in office? Don't worry, okay? When Trump gets in office, we're going to cut this stuff. That's what we were told, including by Trump, who said, no, 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 pass it good, let's get it over with. That didn't happen, did it? What was the promise they made us when they got in office? And it, by the way, this was Musk saying this and Trump together, and I think Musk truly believed it, that we're, you know, we are going to shave so much money here, we may be able to cut a dividend check to the American people. We are going, the idea behind the Doge cuts wasn't just to cut the fraud and waste, but it was to do it to stop the deficit spending, or to cut it back anyway. I don't think we were never going to stop all of it. And Musk was saying, look, we could cut the deficit in half. We can find $1 trillion of waste and fraud. I still think they will. I just think they're being a little more low key about it. And the reason they are is because they know if the Republicans get wind of it, they'll spend that too. That was the promise. I mean, I actually remember because I sit in this chair every day. That's what they were saying January, February. They're even going to cut us, Americans, checks with the money they saved. Where'd that go? It's not happening. And look, when you have 26 senators vote against the Doge cuts, Noel Fritsch just talked about that in the last segment, including Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham. 26 GOP senators. I can see how he feels betrayed. It's a really sad situation. And you know what's going to happen? But we're going to lose midterms. You know why we're going to lose midterms? Republican voters. It's not going to be that there, you know, people are going to vote Democrat. We're just going to stay home. How do you get excited for that kind of betrayal? You don't. And it is. It's a betrayal. They told us in the fall this was going to stop. And then they told us when they came in this was going to stop. It's not going to stop. When Republicans get wind in the House and the Senate, oh, Elon Musk saved $165 billion. Cool. Let's spend it now. And that's what they're doing. The good news is, though, they remember they found $500 billion in expired programs. They basically alluded to it and then stopped talking about it. And then they found a few weeks ago that basically a little over a third of the expenditures were ineligible, i.e. fraudulent. They aren't putting real numbers out. Yeah, they don't want Republican leaders to have them, or they will think, oh, money we can spend. So Trump may be able to do these cuts later. I hope that's what he's planning. I hope. Democrats just can't figure out why they scare people. So they're spending $20 million to study the syntax of male video casters to figure out how to speak in modern male so as to confuse men into voting for them. A cheaper and easier way to do it would be to just stop scaring people with crazy stuff that they're doing. Like the fantasy shadow government. Oh, you're going to love this. This shows you where they're going and that they haven't learned a darn thing. Helpful suggestion. Helpful suggestion published by Political. What the Democrats need to make people like them is a shadow cabinet. In other words, certain individuals who will, you know, take up the role of, say, head of Department of Homeland Security. They're not going to actually be the head of Department of Homeland Security because Trump's in office, but that person will always respond and, you know, begin to act as a Homeland Security Secretary should, in their opinion, and that will make people want to elect them. Okay, cool. So who should be the head of the Department of Homeland Security? Oh, you thought the last one was radical? Oh, check this out. Who Democrats would have, should have, as their Department of Homeland Security? Gisele Fetterman. Wait, who's she? John Fetterman's wife. She's an illegal immigrant from Brazil. Wait. The answer to winning hearts and minds is an illegal immigrant running the Department of Homeland Security who will what? Presumably let all the other illegal immigrants in? Yeah, people love it. Come on, she's really cute. Okay. Folks, terrifying to think this party ever gains power again. Wait till you hear what they're doing in California, where the legislature just voted to legalize illegal immigrants overseeing their elections. Well, I mean, it's the next logical step. First, they vote in them and everybody's cool with it. Now they oversee them. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. And then what? You go to the head of the Department of Homeland Security to complain and another illegal immigrant. Great. Everyone's going to love this. They'll totally vote Democrat next time.